Well, hey there, fellow nerds and ne'er-do-wells, and welcome to the Adventurers Anonymous podcast and the little section I like to call Off the Wagon, where we do a little one-on-one interview with the characters. Now, this week, we have your favourite green giant, Hanash himself, voiced by the very wonderful Mr. Chris Ragg. So we thought we would just give some quick-fire questions, Chris, if that's all right.
Hello, hit me.
All right. Describe Hanash in 30 seconds. Give us the elevator pitch.
He's being of pure chaos. He gets really angry very quickly, but is satisfied just as quickly. So he'll get angry, he'll do a poop, and he'll be all better. Like, it doesn't take long to pair out. And yeah, he really enjoys like messing around with his friends the most. That's what he really enjoys. And he kind of loves everyone but hates everyone, I guess.
Things I've noticed. He doesn't do well with children. He seems to really despise children in particular.
It's a short fuse. They're so annoying so quickly that... it's not anything specifically to a children. It's just like, yeah, that they... Oh. There's too annoying for him, essentially.
Okay. But I appreciate the fact that you said he lives for his friends. He likes it. Like, I think that's interesting because you've got close bonds with them. Like, but it feels like you're always the first person to be putting yourself in danger for them.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's because like maybe he struggles to make friends because like he gets them and he gets so excited that he like pranks them all the time. It's probably really annoying to be around. but.
Pranks them. It is true. You are the prankster, aren't you? Of the group, you are definitely the prankster. I like that. All right, next quickfire question. I promised quickfire and I failed. I got so interested. What's Hanash's best feature?
I think maybe his like giddiness. I think he's like quite joyful and like finds amusement easily.
Yeah. He does. I'd like what you said earlier. From watching you, from the, you know, obviously as an outside watching your character, you obviously get a lot of joy from violence and anger, and that fuels your inner chaotic rage. But also, you have quite a sort of playful, almost like juvenile energy about you, which is hilarious, like a little prankster. But you reckon that's your best feature?
I think so. Well, I'm just thinking of like Hanash's other features. Like he's pretty strong, but like he's quite straightforward. So, like he just kind of hits something really hard. It's not particularly impressive. He's just really strong.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I it's my favorite feature of his anyway.
I like it.
Maybe not the most useful feature, but you know.
Oh, it is. You're like the tank. You throw yourself on the line in harm's way, protecting your friends, so your tiny little gnome friend at the back can just fire arrows. Tati'd be squashed if it wasn't for you.
I'm just there to give him sneak attack. That's all. That's the only reason I'm there. Get within 5 feet.
Maybe you should get sneak attack tattooed on your back, because the only people who are ever going to see it are your colleagues. Right. What is Hanash's worst habit?
Worst habit. I think he's quite aggressive against Belsiar, and I think this goes back to like I think this goes back to we had like a young Hanash and Belsiar, like they met like ages ago, and like they were like doing a job, and like they went to like Belsiar was doing like a child's like party. I can't remember what the one shot was, but
that's right,
it was ages ago, and I think ever since then, like Hanash really likes Belsiar, but he also really likes to piss him off, and I think that can get in the way of getting business done.
I can tell you for a fact what happened there, because I wasn't there. I had to go on holiday and I left it in Chris's control, and he ran a really cool one shot, and I think it was something like a children's birthday party and you all met and goblins attacked. I wasn't there and it wasn't recorded, listeners, so no one will ever get to hear it. The only person who knows this is Mr. Rag, Mr. Neil, and Matt. I've only heard legend of it, but that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's good. And I think Belsiar hit me once with a spell, and ever since, I've never been able to like get over it.
I think we both know he's hit you more than once with a spell. He's nearly killed you many times with a spell.
I feel like I think it's more times than it actually is. I'm like, every week he's trying to kill me, but it's probably been like only a few times, but Hunter Schultz are great.
And let's wrap up with, what's one thing about Hanash that would surprise the listeners to know?
I think Hanash wishes like he had a long-term relationship. He's gone from like casual fling to fling. You know, he makes it seem like he's not interested, but it's because he doesn't want to put himself out there because he's scared of being vulnerable.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I can't even remember what Matt Durant said last time we did this, but that tops it. Dear Lord, he's afraid of intimacy. He's afraid of vulnerability. I love that. That's phenomenal. Like, I thought you were going to say genuinely, and you know, I was like, oh, you know, he's a big fan of origami. No one ever gets to see it because he waits till everyone's asleep. Or some like very genteel kind of thing. But no, he craves like some sort of long form relationship. The interesting thing is, you once had a pet and you left him on a ship. You had a sausage dog called Salami and you left him with the famous pirate Dutch Nuggets. He's still on Dutch Nugget ship.
I think a dog's similar to a child, maybe to Hanash, and like it's kind of fun and novel, but I think can like kind of get on his nerves quite quickly. So I think he'd rather be a dog uncle than a dog dad.
Right. Well, there you go, listeners. That has been Off the Wagon with Mr. Chris Ragg. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. And without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode.
Bye.
I think we also have to ask for the listeners who can't see this. What have you just spooned into your mouth, Chris Ragg? It's either Nutella or poo.
Oh. Oh, hello. This is a whole new direction for...
what you get there? What you got there, pal?
You got there? Share with the class.
That was a classy beard shot.
If only this was a video medium, listeners, you would have been able to see Chris Ragg's tonsils there. He's still slowly spoon-feeding something brown and viscous into the front of his mouth whilst licking his lips.
I'm slightly concerned that he won't tell us exactly what it is.
It's Marmite. He does seem like the kind of guy to eat Marmite out of a jar with a spoon.
I would eat Marmite out of a jar. This is some sort of caramel chocolate Valentine's Day dessert, I think.
That's fucking great.
Love that. And that's really the spirit of Valentine's. Okay. Last we left off with our intrepid adventurers, they had found a way to flee Nicodrana, stealing a hearse, piling two coffins on top of each other, and bungling their conversation with the city guard on the way out. They had basically decided to just use brute force and had ploughed their way with the two horses out of the Wayne Gate of the east of Nicodrana, making their way into the early night, and having felt that they were finally safe, having put a distance between them and the city as they made their way to the Cirrus Mountains, it unfortunately dawned on them they were not alone. The elves had been following them and were now maybe 100 meters behind them on horseback, coming towards them. And that is where we pick up back with the action with your good selves.
Does anyone have any like super like fun cute spells?
Cute spells? They don't have any fun, cute abilities we can use.
Yeah, just about cute and like smoke bombs or something. I don't know. The like darkness, like that's cute.
I have a spell we can use.
Yeah.
It's just dynamite.
You can't throw dynamite 100 meters, you son of a bitch.
I definitely can't. That's absolutely true.
Even Hunach couldn't do such a feat.
Such a feat of physical strength.
Now then, Tati, are you going to carry on riding the hearse?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I'm not slowing down so much, but I'm also I'll also probably just stay on the road as well.
Okay.
I don't want them following us and also knowing exactly where we're going to go. So if I see the place where I would turn north towards the mountains,
mm-hmm.
I'll probably just keep going on the road.
Oh, right. Okay. Rather than turning off north towards the Cirrus Mountains, if you get to that juncture, you'd go straight on to lead them away.
I mean, it doesn't really make much difference if they're just following us, right? And we'll probably just kill them anyway. I think we'll just keep going.
From this point of view, this dynamic, what I'm going to ask you to do is this has just turned into a chase mechanic. Tati, you will roll initiative for your party and the elves will roll initiative and we will see what happens. On your turn, you individuals can do whatever you want to try and help your cause or impede the cause of the people behind you. And on every turn, you'll make a roll on a d20. Should you roll low enough, there'll be a condition, some sort of condition, some sort of impediment, yeah? So there are consequences that can happen on every turn of a chase. If you roll 11 and higher, there'll be no consequences, basically.
Okay.
For the sake of this chase, who's going to roll for your party?
Do we get our regular individual bonuses to initiative? Because I get a +4, and that would be cool.
If you wish to, Tati, as indeed the chase will be on your ability to keep the horses in check.
If anyone gets a better bonus, I'm happy to let them roll.
They're on horses, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're on horses. And they're more than 30 feet away at the moment.
Yes, that's right. So, Tati, you roll your initiative for the party, Adam 4, and I will roll for the elves. Who rolled a natural 1? Fucking phenomenal.
That makes me feel better, because I don't know what this dice is about to do to me. Okay, that's a 15.
Okay, so you get the first initiative. The elves are currently 60 feet behind you at this point.
Okay.
So it's your turn first. Tati, I'm going to presume that you're spending your time controlling the horses, right? So...
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Okay, being your turn, I'm going to need you to make me an animal handling check.
23.
Cool. So in your turn, you managed to push the gap up to 70 feet. All right.
Solid.
So you basically G up the horses. You catch the elves off guard. As you look back, you see that they weren't ready for you to make a breakaway, and you see they slightly drift back into the darkness. Now, Hanash, Belsier, and Mord and Aristobulus, etc. Anything you particularly want to do as you see 70 feet in the background?
Can we shoot at them, or is that violating the rules of engagement?
I'll allow it.
Do whatever you want. It's your turn.
Are we in a friendly chase, or...?
The Geneva Convention is out the window. You can do what you want. I'll allow it.
Okay, what were you going to say? Sorry, Anish.
I was going to ask if, I was going to say to Tati, can you pump the brakes a little bit? And I was going to, as Maud, use Entangle, maybe, which is a range of 90 feet, so we don't have to give up 10 feet of ground, which we could probably do on our turn, I guess, and then use Entangle on one of the horses.
We could probably do that just before our movement anyway. If we just use Entangle and then using my action for the animal handling check. Entangle's a good idea. I was looking at the same thing.
How far is Entangle?
90 feet, and also has a range of 20 feet, so it could get
we could get all of them.
Cool. Maud will do this. So Maud, Entangle! And they're going to make a DC strength saving throw, 13.
Okay.
Big Maud energy.
I don't know why she's become a ghost, but she died at some point.
No, it tracks.
Entangle! Okay, they have to make a what? A DC strength?
Strength 13.
13.
First one fails. Second one fails. Both of them are entangled as Maud pulls some seeds out of her pocket and blows them off the palm of her hand behind you. As you look in the distance, you can see vines reach up out of the ground and just start twisting around the horse's hooves of the two elves. They look like they're pinned to the spot. As you see, the horses stop entangled and the two riders are just thrown clear as they just lie face down in the dirt as you carry on. Anyone else doing anything on your turn? Otherwise, we'll defer back to the elves.
I will say, this is a hard thing that maybe one person in particular would pick up on. When they're restrained, they have disadvantage on dexterity saving throws. I'm just going to put that out there.
Stinking cloud.
I feel like it's important to say it. And then it's said. And then everybody knows. I'm saying this as Chris, not as Tati. I'm not saying, like, send them to the abyss. I would find it hilarious, personally, if we entangled them and then threw a fireball or something similar. Because we're a bunch of absolute straight killers.
The one of the fireballs is literally burning a hole in my pocket.
That's Kato's cloaca. You can feel the heat on your hip.
We really need to get him to a vet.
Let's give him a fireball.
Okay. They get disadvantage on dexterity saving throws, do they?
Yeah, if they're restrained by entangle.
That's a dexterity 14 saving throw.
Got it. Okay, so they get disadvantage.
To the horses as well, I guess.
Oh, boy.
No, I'll spare the horses if I can, because they were thrown forward, right?
First one passes.
The people were thrown forward. Whew. The horses were, yeah.
I'm a friend to the animals, as you know.
One pass, one failed.
Okay, so they take... Why do we have so many dice if not to use them all? So that's 8d6 damage for one, and then half that for the other.
Jesus Christ! Why did I give you such powerful weapons?
So that's 28 damage for one, and then 14 damage for the other.
Okay, yep. One of them very badly burned. You just see his cloak going and just inflaming as you hear him screaming, even at that distance, as he just rolls around in the dirt trying to put out his flaming, like, cape, as the other one just dives to one side into a bush as you just see the bush immolate. The elf's hair, naturally full of cleaning products, both, like, shampooed and conditioned, just starts blazing as he swats at the side of his hair, pulling out clumps of silken blonde hair. Now then, any more actions for you, or you're going to have to just see whether there's any impediments as a group?
Let me just see if Aristobulus can do anything.
Is magic missiles the only thing that or Guiding Bolt?
Yeah. Maybe he'll just use one of his magic missiles charges.
Okay.
Just because he can. So I always forget this because it's cast at like a fifth level. So it's additional darts 7d4+7.
Wowza. And it's auto hit. How are you splitting them? There's two elves.
Did you say one of them? Yeah, one of them took full damage from the fireball, right? I'll do 3 on him and 4 on the other one.
Okay. So roll the one with the 3 first.
Yeah. Plus 3. So 9 damage to the first one. The second one takes a lot of ones, guys. Yeah, first one takes 9, second one takes 10.
Not a problem. Okay, so the first guy, having swatted himself out, like rolling around in the dirt, just picking up dirt and just putting out the flames on him, he stands up as magical crackling energy just flies off the back of your hearse and just impacts into his chest, instantly throwing him off his feet again, as you just hear an elf just going, "Come on! What?" As he literally just finds himself looking down at the crater in the middle of his chest that's just crackling with red energy as he sighs to himself. This was not the day he was hoping for. One of you, I need you to roll me a d20. This represents the chance of you hitting an obstacle.
And Ash, do you want to do it?
Physical! Physical! 18.
18, you are just fine. There are no complications with your turn. As you carry on, just looking back, having a giggle, Hanash, looking at the two slightly bedraggled elves behind you. It is now the elves' turn. What's the DC saving throw on Entangle, please? Is it strength?
13, yeah.
Strength.
Strength.
First one gets a 2, plus modifiers. They both fail. So both of their horses are just fully entangled as both of them try and pull the roots up, which are entangled, the hooves of their horses. As you look back, you see a third elf horseman just blast through the smoke over the top of his comrade's fallen horses as he gallops at distance.
They will have to make a strength saving of 13 because it's on the ground. If they go over it, then they have to make the strength 13 saving throw.
Difficult terrain, isn't it?
Just for the sake of honesty, go on then. No.
Just for the sake of the rules of the game.
They're quite all right. They rolled a 21. They leap over the top, almost majestically, as you see them arcing through the smoke.
It's a strong horse.
Landing back down on the ground, you see the third horseman galloping as he looks back and just shakes his head at his friends who have failed. You see him making a handling check. He rolls a natural one. Not very good. He stays at about... you've managed to draw the distance out. Still 70 feet. So it now goes back to your turn. You've got two immobilized elves behind you and one on your tail. Tati, top of the round. I presume you're going to make a animal handling check.
I sure as hell will. Ooh, that is a 18.
18's good. Pushing that distance up to 80 feet now. Looking back, target's getting even smaller in your rear view mirror, if you had a rear view mirror on a hearse. You see, you're pulling away from them. Right, Hanash, Belsia, Mord, Aristobulus. Anything you want to do is you see a lone elven horseman 80 feet behind you as you pull away.
80 feet, eh?
I was going to say the only reason I was going to go with Aristobulus first is because Guiding Bolt is 120 foot range, and if it hits, A, it does a decent amount of damage, but B, if you need to roll an attack roll against it, if Guiding Bolt hits, the next attack roll has advantage, so it might help you.
Crunchy.
Let's see. Shadowheart never hits with Guiding Bolt in Baldur's Gate 3. Bless her heart, Shadowheart is really shit.
She does for me, but maybe that's because she's my bae in the game.
Ugh.
She's a healer, not a fighter.
To be fair, I do call her Shart.
Aw.
Just for the hell of it. I can't remember whether that was before or after she stopped hitting things. That is a... Oh shit, that's a 24. I hit.
24. Phenomenal. How much damage does that do?
4d6. So that is... I really hope you keep these sounds in, by the way.
Always. Hui, hui. It's our Mortal Kombat. Hua, hua. Cha.
14 damage.
14 damage.
Next attack roll has advantage.
Okay, just narratively, Aristobulus spits into the palm of his hands, rubs it together, points his fingers as crackling red energy flies out of his fingertips. He aims up as it arcs into the air, dipping, it hits the elf square in the chest as you see them rock back in their stirrups, just holding on by grim, like almost holding on to the mane of the horse, trying to keep themselves upright. You see they're in some pain. Who's up next? Anyone doing anything?
Hanash says to Belsia, Is there anything you fancy doing, buddy? You got anything you want to throw at this guy or gal?
It's too far to see what gender they are.
I do. we'd need to stop, wait for them to get into range, do it, and then immediately start moving again.
I might have something that I can do then, potentially. So this is one for the dungeon mommy.
Wow.
AJ. So I've got dynamite, but I don't know what the fuse time is. Like, I'm kind of wondering, like, if I throw it and try and time it so it goes off when the person goes, like,
okay,
over. I don't know if they're too far away to make this happen or not.
No. I really like the mechanics of that. Now, obviously, you can cut a fuse shorter. You can't cut it longer, yeah? So I need you to make me a perception check.
Sure. That's 17.
17! You reckon it's about a 8-second fuse at the moment?
All right. I spell Seath a little bit of fire, and then I...
Sorry, I just imagine you're waiting for a match. Belciar just holds out a whole arm on fire.
Just pulls out a Zippo. Other lighter brands are available.
Just pulls out a crow, squeezes it as a small gout of flame just comes out of his crow's mouth.
And then I impressively know how far he's throw to make it blow up in time, and I throw it, and I count down to the explosion.
All right. Okay. Now, hold on, because I locked in the rules for this.
I think I've got them as well, if it's the right ones.
DC 12 saving throw.
Dexterity.
Yeah.
Fucking natural one.
Oh, what does that mean? Do we knock him off the horse?
Is he just a shadow on the wind now? Just consumed by fire?
All right. Roll me all the damage.
It's like 6d6 fire damage. That's crazy.
Whoa. There's a lot of sixes there. 26.
26 would do it. So what happens... You light the dynamite, Hanash. You watch it burning down. Suddenly come back to consciousness. You're almost giggling to yourself looking at dynamite. You suddenly realize you've lit it. You panic. You hurl it into the night sky as you watch it tumble end over end, just arcing through the night sky. The elf is not stupid. He also sees what's happening. In that split second, he realizes what's happened. He goes to swerve his horse out of the way. The horse, suddenly bucking to the side, gets its hoof caught in a small rut or root and throws him forward. Unfortunately, on a natural one, he tumbles forward and just lands on top of the dynamite as he just scrabbles from side to side. He just looks down in time as you just see him explode. Chunks of elf just thrown like 20, 30 feet into the air as you just look back through the darkness with your dark vision, just giggling as you see heads and limbs just rain down in a small area behind you.
That one's for you, Jerry. That one's for you.
Yes. Yes. So, for your records, please scratch off one dynamite. You now have 9 sticks of dynamite left in your inventory.
Wait, I mean, you have 4, I have 5.
Boom.
Oh, apologies. Sorry, I didn't realise you had... Okay.
We'd split them in half. maybe I'll give you one of mine later. Maybe, if you're a good boy.
I don't want your imaginary dynamite, Chris. That sounds like a euphemism.
Not you. You'll never have my exploding stick.
I'd rather have a spoonful of whatever Chris Rag's eating.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Wisdom of One is a podcast about fantasy.
What are you, and what is your special?
He's on the dollar menu. He's delicious.
Brothers arguing.
You guys are the worst people ever! I hate all of you!
And really good decisions.
So the wind is whistling past your ears as you're plummeting over the cliff.
So, please find Wisdom of One, subscribe, and give us a try.
Jesus, we're really doing the cannibalism thing?
Wisdom of One, and Wisdom of One. Charisma of 20, but a Wisdom of One.
Right. Hanash, scratch one dynamite off. You could not have had a better use of it if you tried. Listeners, just because I know you're concerned, the horse is fine. The horse is just fine. The rider? Not so much. He's pink mist.
The elf was turned into pink mist and his limbs were sent flying everywhere. The horse has been shunted through space to a farm.
The horse just wandered in the wilderness for a while and then it met a donkey and they lived happily ever after in a beautiful open relationship. But that's not the point right now.
Can I make comments about a UK supermarket brand of lasagna that won't get us sued?
What was that brand? Beep!
It's funny, every time I speak, my audio comes up.
Strange that. Who'd put horse meat in a lasagna? Strange. In the value range.
Well-known UK supermarket.
Well-done, UK supermarket of no given name. Right. Are all of you retrobates finished?
Can I pull one out for my plan that didn't come to fruition where I was going to cast Reduce on one of the horses?
Oh, that would be awesome. Gone. Let him go.
Very funny.
One day.
Yeah. I'll just enlarge on one of the people. That would have been high risk, high rewards. Just enlarge on one of the guys and just like, just falls over on the horse.
That'd be amazing.
Our enemies are now twice as big, but they're also...
They also have to deal with being twice as big.
My mental image there was an elf gaining on you on a horse that's already hung like a horse, and then you use enlarge on the horse, and then now suddenly the horse is hung like a python, and it just trips over its own engorged member as it just goes head over heels.
That should be like a wild magic variation of enlarge reduce, where you don't get to choose what happens.
Instead of casting it on an enemy in general, you cast it on their cock, and it just and it just grows. It just grows. They don't get a boner, like they're flaccid, but it's a big flaccid dick.
Oh no, exactly. It's literally like a penile boat anchor.
You throw a blue pill at them and then see what happens.
Oh, wow. Dear God. Other erectile dysfunction pills are available, listeners.
It lasts for 8 hours.
Really? Do they? I was not aware of that.
If it lasts for more than 8 hours, please seek attention of a cleric.
Yeah. We'll just dip it in yogurt. That always works. Right. Getting back to the action.
I don't know if we can.
We've lost Mr. Rag. We've lost Mr. Rag.
Wait.
So tangy.
Yeah.
Why is that a solution?
What?
I don't think we can get past this.
We can. Don't you kink shame me.
Why would you? It's not. I don't think it counts as kink shaming if I'm asking questions. I just want to know what
kink curiosity.
Yeah. I'm trying to keep the lines of dialogue open. I want to know why yogurt does it for you.
Chris, it's a prescription yogurt, and you're not allowed to ask what for. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
So you're not just buying like Greek yogurt from Tesco's. Tesco's.
What the fuck have you brought the nation of Greece into this for? It could be natural yogurt. Fucking
hell. It could be natural yogurt.
It does have to be Greek yogurt, you absolute deviant.
Not that unnatural Greek shit.
Wow.
Shout out to Greece.
I love you, Greece.
Love you.
Another demographic we have to apologize to. Fucking amazing.
Yeah. I consult the map and I start to turn us slightly more north.
Whoa! All right, enough of this genital talk. We're not finished with this yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just want it on record for Hunash and Belsia. I tried to get us back to some semblance of the rails.
Yes, noted.
No. I'm saying we're finished with all the flimsy talk about yogurt and my cock. I'm saying we haven't finished with the encounter. All right, you've blown one elf up. You've entangled two others. It's end of your turn. You must still, by the rules of the chase engagement of Dungeons and Dragons, roll to see whether there's some sort of obstacle. So you have to roll a d20 and we'll see what the result is. And then we will see whether this encounter is over.
Belsia's turn.
Oh, Belsia's turn. Okay.
Yeah.
You did the first one, didn't you, Tony?
Well, I've been doing the animal handling checks. I want you guys to get to roll dice.
Yeah.
That's a 16.
Damn you! No complications. I was so excited that maybe there would be complications. Absolutely none. As you look back, Tati, you just see Hanash just waving his hand joyously around in the air as he's just blown an elf into pink mist. You carry on into the night in the knowledge that you've outrun the three elves and they're not going to be able to catch up with you. Carry on, yeah, as you see the turning off towards the Sirius Mountains and the woodland thicket at the base of it. What are you doing? There's a spur on the road that just juts off to the left, heading north.
So, from looking at the map, am I thinking that the road that goes off to the left to like turn north will be the one that leads to the Wyoon Gorge, or can I see like the start of the like the base of the woods?
Yeah, it's before that. So yeah, you haven't gone. The road that goes up to the Wyoon Gorge would be much larger. This is more of, if we were using British transport vernacular, we would call this a B road, I suppose, or something like that. You know, like this isn't a main highway.
I'll mutter something about our taxes going to maintain these roads, and then I'll turn off into the woods.
When was the last time any of you deviants paid taxes?
I can't possibly comment.
VAT?
Yeah, we pay businesses, and businesses pay tax. So it's indirectly some
value added theft.
Look, we are heroes of the local maritime economy.
Yeah.
We facilitated the opening of a popular bar in
they should be
the
paying
hip
us.
And up-and-coming area of Quayside Nicodranas.
You did. Not only that, you often leave gold coins around for urchins to steal. You massively overpay your bills in inns, 100 gold coins. Not only that, you also paid for an advance for a deluxe coffin that you probably won't pick up. And better yet than
they
that...
They can write that off as a tax expense.
I've never seen Matt's eyes light up so much, so quickly. Just, they can write that off as an expense.
Better yet, one thing that you probably haven't considered, you've currently got a open tab on the Lady Luck boat moored up in the quayside, which is under repair.
I paid a couple of days of the docking fees and asked them to do the repairs. I did say I would go down there and pay that after a few more days, I think it was.
You did?
I guess it's kind of an open tab.
It is an open tab. We'll go back. They'll ask you for the bill or impound it at some point.
We'll go back.
You also left Tooks. As you are just trundling up the side road, heading towards the base of the Sirius Mountains and the woods before them, you do spare a thought, Tati, to Tooks, who was sitting in the restaurant, Spread and Dip, waiting for her new business partners to turn up. As she just sighs, waves at the waiter and gets another glass of Tempranillo.
I sigh and smile to myself and say, ugh, she was coming on very strong. I definitely did not want to go on that date. And I'm glad we're not in town anymore. Next time we see her, maybe I'll more clearly explain that it is only a business relationship. And even then, it's a very quick one because we only want to buy the place. I'm just talking to Barbara about all of this. And then I'm gonna turn around to Hanash and Belsiar and just be like, "Hey, you guys still want to be vampires?" Sun's coming up real quick. No, I'm kidding. It's probably not.
Okay. I know Kato doesn't, and I kind of feel bad. And
it is logistically tricky to be awake at different times.
I have just spent a lot of money on a coffin. I guess I can, I mean, I'll still get to use it.
Still get to use the coffin. We do have a hearse now. I mean, I don't know exactly what kind of pranks and bits this opens up, but it surely opens up something. And adding coffins to that only increases that in my head.
I think I've had a lot of fun as a vampire, but maybe it's time to put vampiring to one side and return to the land of the living.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, okay.
Yeah? Are you guys sure? Sorry, I feel like I'm pressuring you, but it was only because I heard you talking to Kato earlier about it. And, you know, whether he wants to be a vampire or not is one thing, but, like, I'll ask you guys first. You guys were first on the wish train. Hashtag wish train.
Yeah.
Well, I think Kato, I give up my... If there's only two spots, I'd give mine to Kato.
You've got three wishes.
Could we not use one wish to wish everyone within 20 feet is no longer a vampire? Or is that too powerful?
I will say, as a DM and the rule of cool, and because I'm an omnipotent god, I will say because you became vampires at the same point, and it was inferred at the same point with the Dr. Klimt Cream, I will say that it will take one wish to...
Oh, yeah.
Undo it for both of you, so you have two wishes left.
And then if we undo that time, it's like Back to the Future, if we undo that time, 1985A, then Kato doesn't become a vampire either.
Well, so it would be like everyone who became a vampire on a particular day becomes mortal again.
No, I mean, like, us two and anyone that we turned into a vampire.
Yes, it may change events. There are consequences to your wish.
Okay, I'll use a wish, and I will say, these guys are no longer vampires.
These guys, that's the best how tricky wishes are and how precisely you have to do them. It's just like, these guys no longer vampires.
Tati, you reach into your inventory, rummage around and push him back a few daggers and a hair clip. You find the ring of three wishes. As you roll it onto your finger, you see it almost shrinks to fit your finger when it's too large at first. I'm not saying it attunes, but it basically aligns to you and fits your finger. As you look down at it, you see a bright red stone on it. As you rub the red stone, as you look at both of your friends, you find that moment where you realize the gravity of the situation. Take the ring, rubbing it with apprehension. You've never had anything of quite like this. The fear that's bestowed upon this moment, because the weight of it and the gravity, almost with like fear and trembling, you mumble the words of the wish. As you watch the ring glow, you feel the heat in your hand, Tati, as the red jewel in the ring glows. Putting a hand on the chest of both of your friends, which is difficult because you're a gnome, as they kneel down in front of you. Waiting for a moment, pregnant pause, nothing happens. And then Hanash and Belcia, like the most thunderous force as air is smashed back into your lungs which have deflated and wizened, are suddenly smashed back full of air. Every part of your body coming back online, almost like being defibrillated. You are blasted back to life. It's a jolt neither of you are ready for, as you didn't realize how dead you were. The sudden rush of fluids back round your body, you're almost like a deflated balloon reflated, and the sudden noise, which has gone from like the silence of your body being static to your heart pumping again, is just wild. The rush, like the greatest drug you've ever taken, as both of you just feel warmth just running back through your veins as you groan. Hanash, the first thing you notice is you desperately need a shit, as everything comes back online, including your plumbing.
Oh, God. I guess I instantly shit myself. not through toys. I think it's just gonna happen, I guess.
Hanash casts Stinking Cloud.
What do you two do?
I cry. I cry to see poop coming out of Hanash again.
I guess I stab Belsiad a little bit to see if we bleed now. But I don't want to stab myself.
Obviously, you don't want to stab yourself. I mean, that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Make me an attack with your dagger on Belsia. This is the most Hanash thing ever.
I mean, I'll have to do it with my great axe.
Just grabbing the first sharp object that that's near you happens to be a great axe.
Just pulls out dynamite.
16.
Yeah, that hits.
That's a roll attack. Okay, we just do kick. I'm not full on swinging. I'm just doing like a little slice.
All right, roll half damage.
Half damage.
You're more like holding it up to him and just like.
Yeah. That's not too bad. That's three damage.
Okay, that's right, pretty good.
Three damage.
Okay.
As Hanash just picks it up and just runs it across your chest, as you see the fabric split open on your robes. As crocodilian blood just starts weeping out of your wound, Belcia.
We're alive, Belcia! We're alive!
Yay.
Both of you, back to life, just charging at your friends, hugging. Tati, you can feel the warmth coming out of them now, like the colour returning. Hanash had gone a weird pallid green, a bit like the colour of mould, and now a dark richness is running back through his skin.
One of you guys piss yourself?
Hanash has shat himself, to the best of my knowledge.
It's warm and it smells bad. Did one of you guys piss?
One of us?
It's okay if you did.
As all of you are embracing in that moment, just hugging and hugging, just holding on to each other, we're going to very quickly pan back to Maritopia, to the tidal city of Maritopia, out in the Lycidian Ocean, a flotsam and jetsam city made up, if you remember from yesteryear, in the previous episode, made up of lots of like derelict parts of boats and metal and stuff like that. As you see a pile of bodies, not that you can see this, but this is just for narrative reasons. You see a whole pile of bodies on the corpse pile, which are just slowly decomposing. They have a composter. As an arm just bursts up, as Dr. Klimt Cream, who was killed by the vampires, now changing the timeline. Just a little scream as the doctor in his lab coat just comes back to life, the timeline forever changed.
Aww.
He just pulls himself out of the pile of decomposing bodies, food, rubbish, and stuff, as he's like, ugh! Oh my god, I had the weirdest dream! As he just pulls some shit out of his mouth and just spits it out like a teabag, as he's like, ugh, what has happened? As, again, in Nicodranus, a dead turtle that was just slumped up in an alleyway, slowly his cold body just sits upright as the ancient turtle sailor is like, oh my god, as he just like looks down, just looking at his neck, and as he just stands up. You have changed the timeline, but both of you are very much alive now.
I pull a photograph out of my pocket, and it's a picture of me and Hanash, and I've got the like the old woman skin cape on. And I go to Hanash and say, look at the photograph, and the skin cape disappears slowly.
Just as the skin cape melts away into dust, almost like in The Avengers, you just see it turn into ashes and just melt away into the multiverse.
I pull out a photo of Skarl with his family, and I just look at it, and it just says old-timey photograph underneath it, and nothing happens.
As you're just rubbing Scott's face.
Get out of there!
There you go. Right, listeners, what a note to end that episode on. I didn't think that was going to happen. That was such a treat. Amazing. Oh my god, I can't wait for people to hear that. Absolute gem. Right, any more for any more?
How much this about, we can still get a castle, right?
Yeah, I think what I might do, don't tell anyone, but I'm going to just pretend to be a vampire. So I can live the life, I can use my coffin and get the castle, and people don't need to know. And also, people are less likely to try and kill us.
Great.
I mean, you get the best of both worlds. There's not villagers hunting you down because they don't understand you.
Yeah.
But you can still have a castle, and you can still use that coffin. Like I said, I think there's a use for the hearse and the coffins that we've not figured out yet. I think there's something funny here.
Yeah.
It's at this point, Belsia, that you notice something that was bugging you in the back of your mind.
Oh no.
Your right pocket has been very still. For the first time in a long time, you've not felt anything rummaging around in your right-hand pocket.
Oh, no!
As you reach into your pocket to pull out Kato, to tell him, you just pull out the cold, still body of Kato.
No!
As it dawns on you that the only way you saved him was by turning him into a vampire with your vampiric. As you look at the cold, flaccid form of Kato in your hands.
The monkey's paw.
If you were never a vampire, you could never have saved him.
He would have died at the...
He would have died on the Lady Luck.
He died.
As you have the cold, wilted form of Kato in your hands. A single crocodile tear rolls down your cheek.
Hermes puts his hand on Belsia to, like, comfort him and... almost like he's going to be nice, but Hanash says he was a dick anyway, man.
But he was my dick.
I mean, to be fair, he didn't seem that happy about being a vampire anyway. Right after he came back, he was like, "What the fuck?"
Well. There we go, listeners. We will chalk that up onto the long list of people and things that Belsia has loved that he has accidentally killed. Lovers,
everything
pets,
that I ever
everything
loved
he's ever loved. Oh my god. Well, that wasn't... Yeah, that just came to me. Right, what a note to end on, listeners. Oh god, I'm going to need a moment's silence. I might just bake one into the edit.
That's classic monkey's paw.
Right. It's with a sadness that I have to say, listeners, before we let you go, we do just want to say a massive thank you for tuning in for another dollop of fun-packed fancy fuck nuggetry. Oh, this is the longest outro ever. I feel so sad. Now, seeing as you've made it this far, why don't you hit that subscribe button and never miss another episode again? Better yet, if you're feeling as sorrowful as we are, why not give us a 5-star review on whatever podcasting platform you are on? All of your reviews and eulogies go a long way towards spreading the word of our misadventures far and wide, and we really do appreciate them. If you fancy chatting to us about anything you've heard across the course of this episode, your best bet is to get hold of us on the platform X, where you can find us at Adventurers A-N-O, number one. But if you want to chat to Mr. Neil in particular, you can find him over on Instagram, where he looks after the Adventurers Anonymous Instagram page. So that just leaves us time to say a huge goodbye from the horseman himself, Mr. Chris Neil.
Bye-bye!
And for us who don't speak gnome?
Farewell. Farewell. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Love that. It's a massive goodbye from the deadliest man ever to wield a stick of dynamite, Mr. Chris Rag.
Goodbye, bitches. And dear listeners.
And it's a massive goodbye from a man who is genuinely weeping crocodile tears. It's Mr. Mandarant.
Very good. So long. Farewell. I'll be the same. Adieu.
Thoughts and prayers, buddy. Beep, 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 beep. Thoughts and prayers. Right, well, we're all off to have a moment's silence and just share memories of that fine crow.
Pull one out for Cato.
Would you say pull one off for Cato?
Yes, that's exactly what Matt said. That's exactly what Matt said.
Is that what they do at Finnish funerals?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. It's a 50-man salute.
Discharging their rifles into the air.
The Great White North.
There's a lineup of privates discharging their rifles into the air. Is that what you
Wow. I think that nearly killed me. That genuinely nearly killed me. Right. There's a mental image. Right, there you go. Right, with any luck, listeners, we'll see you back here next week. You have yourselves an amazing week. But remember,
stay tipsy.
That might be the worst one we've ever done. I think that might be the worst outro we've ever done. All right, Mr. Chris Neil's taken he's slowly becoming horizontal. What are your magic words this week?
He's getting ready to salute.
Yeah, he's getting his private out to discharge his rifle into the air.
I'm getting shrifty.
Yeah, I bet you are. What are your words of wisdom? Come on. Give the people a sign off. Give him a minute. Okay.
Look, if you're going to... gonna record a podcast, make sure you get your apology up top. It's important. You'll never know how much value there is in an apology until you apologize before you say absolutely anything. That's when you realize how much dumb shit you say. And then to sign it off with 50 privates discharging their rifles, discharging their fleshy rifles into the air, sending gravy everywhere. I didn't know that we needed a stronger scandal to finish on, but it turns out we did. Maybe this one will bring us all together, but much more likely is that it will destroy us, mind, body, and soul. I wouldn't say it'll tear us apart, but it will destroy us individually. Mind, body, and soul. Look, if I can leave you with anything, it's the image of those 50 discharging rifles. I really wish I didn't have to, but it's the image of the day.
Right. What more can be said? All right. There we go. No greater apology has ever been needed or given. Right. There we go. Have yourself an amazing week. Adventure is out.